Hello and welcome to the Ship.Energy podcast. This is Mark Williams broadcasting to you from sunny Cambridgeshire in the UK. My guest today, I'm delighted to say, is Mr. Mads Bjørneby. He is the manager of bunker services for TK, the international ship owning and operating company with 26 Suezmaxes, 24 Aframaxes, one VLCC, and up to 67 vessels operated across its different pools. And Mads, I'm sure, will correct me if my numbers are out of date. Mads has been in the industry since 2009. He's held various positions with Wilhelmsen Premier Marine Fuels, Cockett Marine Oil, KPI Bridge Oil. And since 2018, he has headed up the bunker procurement team at TK. We're delighted to have him appear with us on the podcast today, especially in light of his recent stellar performance at the Middle East Bunkering Convention in Dubai last month. So Mads, thank you very much for agreeing to appear and coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
It's great to have you here. And for anyone who was unfortunate not to be in Dubai, I think it could be of use to go over some of the same ground, because I think you had a number of extremely interesting things to say from a bunker buyer's position in the market. And we don't hear enough from bunker buyers in our podcasts. So the first thing I wanted to do was just to ask you about, from a ship owner and operator's perspective, how you think the routes to compliance for EEXI and CII look like they're going to pan out, because obviously that's the core element of everybody's decarbonisation strategy now.
It is indeed. And, you know, this is something that we've been working on for quite a while. And it's now sort of getting close to the deadline date at the end of the year. So it's something we've been working on with all our vessels, with all our crew on board as well, and looking at not only the sort of physical changes that we can make to the vessels, which includes, you know, cleaning of hulls, polishing of propellers, and looking how we can improve the fuel consumption in that way, but also looking at the actual fuel consumption and what we can do in terms of drop-in fuels such as biofuels. That we need to, because this is the sort of first round of these targets that we have for next year, which I would say are, you know, definitely achievable by the industry. But we do know that these targets are going to get stricter and stricter as we get closer to 2030. And then we're going to have to be increasingly developing all the different methods to improving fuel performance and fuel consumption.
Yeah, we had Martin Crawford-Brunt, ex of RightShip, and are now working with the Baltic Exchange on trying to set up some sort of benchmark indicators for EEXI and CII. And he was talking about how, you know, how you the perils, the dangers, the challenges of trying to create industry-wide benchmarks. And from your perspective, is this something even within your own fleet? Is it something where you can create strategies across the fleet, or does everything have to be done on a ship-by-ship basis?
That's a very good question, actually. And if we look at, let's say, our lightering fleet in the US Gulf, they do very short voyages where fuel consumption is probably higher than it would be if it was a traditional voyage, instead of just sort of sailing about 12 to 15 miles in and out of various ports around the US Gulf. So those vessels have an additional challenge just because of the short nature of the voyages. So it's not something that we can look across all our fleet and say, take a Suezmax that's going to do a voyage from the US Gulf to Korea, for example, versus an Aframax lightering vessel that's just going to sail 15 miles into port after she's taken off cargo from a VL. So yeah, it is definitely not a one size fits all type of solution. It's definitely you know, looking at the class of vessel and the sort of voyages that vessel does will inform the different sort of changes that we can make, whether they be physical or whether they be in nature of the fuels and the fuel consumption that we put on the vessel.
So those vessels, like lightering vessels, you know, that, as you say, are doing fairly, extremely short runs, but are coming alongside the vessel they're lightering, presumably with engines on, you know, not full maximum continuous rating, but the engines are at least on. Yep. and there's some dynamic positioning probably going on as well. Do vessels like that and do operations like that lend themselves to consideration of perhaps retrofitting alternative fuel sources to those ships, maybe thinking, well, perhaps we could go down the electricity or the fuel cell route because we're not going very far, but we are using considerable amount of power while standing still.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that we've looked at, probably this was must have been nearly 2 years ago now, just before the spike in gas prices, was LNG. LNG has traditionally been, you know, the cheapest in the US. Mm-hmm. And I think from 2025, there will be LNG available in the US Gulf. And that is definitely one of the alternative fuels that we considered, because that is something that we can, you know, implement today, as it were. It's a proven technology. We're not having to wait for ammonia or methanol. So those sort of fuels are definitely on the horizon for those types of vessels performing those sort of very short voyages. And that could really, really help reduce the emissions as well. So definitely something that we're looking at for that sort of vessel and that sort of operation.
Mm. Because, you know, zooming out, I take your point about, you know, it's got to be horses for courses, and we're looking almost on a ship-by-ship, operation-by-operation basis when we're considering EEXI and CII. But if we're looking at the overall emission reduction requirements or ambitions for the fleet, I think you mentioned at the Dubai conference that we need to cut emissions across the fleet, the global fleet, by 1.42% a year, was it?
Yeah. That's the figures that the IEA have come out with. And, you know, part of the difficulty for the shipping industry, I would say, is that, yes, we do have to reduce emissions. And I think everybody is, you know, agreed and working towards that. It's just a case of when can we do it? Biofuels are available now, but they do cost considerably more than conventional fuels. And if the whole sort of worldwide fleet of vessels was to start bunkering, let's say, a B30 blend, so that's 30% biofuel, I'm not convinced there would be enough biofuel to do it. So mm-hmm. the way that can then affect things like food prices is going to be a real challenge for the industry. But if we look at the sort of 2030 and 2050 horizon, there are very clear targets of what we need to achieve to reduce those emissions. And unfortunately, as an industry, we're not achieving those targets yet. But what I do think is, you know, especially on the biofuel front, from the end of this year going onwards, biofuels will be more available. We'll yet have to see what happens to prices, because the biofuel element is separate to the sort of crude oil pricing element of the rest of the fuel. At the moment, the prices are very high, but I think that's something that we've all you know, we're all agreed that it's going to happen. Whatever way we're going to reduce our emissions and reduce carbon, the prices are going to go up. So that's something that I think the whole industry has accepted. It's just a question now of, can we get those fuels into the ports and supplied onto the ships in the volumes that we need to achieve those targets?
Mm, mm. I was going to ask as well about prices, whether or not volatile energy prices affect decarbonisation strategies, because you've got this very short-term volatility basis geopolitics at the moment in energy mm-hmm. prices. But then you're trying to factor that into very long-term planning, you know, the next generation of ships and potentially the generation after that, as well as what we do with the current ships. And I wanted to ask whether or not that the volatility affects strategies, but it sounds like from what you're saying that of equal, if not greater concern, is the availability of the fuels in the places where we need them.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, price is always important in a commercial business, and especially for, you know, maybe some of the smaller players, that's going to be a challenge for them. It's going to be a challenge for the bigger players as well. But as you say, availability is also vitally important. It's no use shipping companies being willing and having the cash to pay for these fuels if they're not available. Mm. But I think what we're going to see is a pretty big change over the coming couple of years into the availability of biofuels. I think it's a shame that the shipping industry or the IMO hasn't gone down the route that the automotive industry went down, which is just putting biocomponents or FAME into the products at source, as it were, so everyone is lifting the same sort of fuel. But that is what it is, and we'll have to see, you know, if there are enough biofuels available for that to happen. But at the way it's going at the moment, I think it's, you know, you read a lot of news stories recently about a lot of different players getting involved in biofuels, trialing biofuels. which we're looking at as well. There's also the news that there is some discussion at the upcoming June MEPC, where the issue of the NOx emissions is going to be tackled, because that's been a bit of a stumbling block up till now, which meant you couldn't really use the fuels in port. You could only really use them at sea. So if we get mm-hmm. this issue settled and the NOx emissions are included as they have been for conventional fuels, then it'll be a lot easier for everyone to start using these fuels. There'll be no issues around the NOx emissions that there have been up to now.
Yeah, yeah. I think some of the more modern engines, which can burn, for instance, LNG at extremely high temperatures, you know, 1300 Celsius plus in the latest generation of manned gas injection engines, mm-hmm. they can almost, they can minimize, if not entirely do away with some of those NOx formations, can't they? So,
I believe you're right, yeah. So, I think the technology is coming along, and we will get there. It's just, as with shipping and ships themselves, it takes a bit of time to turn it around.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And the IMO, when it's coming up to its MEPC considerations, you did say in Dubai, I think that we'll have to consider not just the tank-to-wake emissions, but the well-to-wake emissions. So that again, I think, puts some more emphasis on the biofuels in the system.
Absolutely. And I think that's very important, because if we don't look at the well-to-wake emissions, we're missing half of the emissions, and you know, we're not really going to get anywhere. So I'm very happy to see that that's now on the radar, and I hope that that is adopted by the IMO in June.
From a commercial perspective, then, it looks like we're moving to, you know, a multi-fuel future with lots of different sources of fuels. And we're moving to a more expensive fuel future than we've been used to for many years. But as you say, availability is going to be a big issue. So does this play into the hands of the larger buyers, the big corporate buyers, and does it disadvantage the independent owner and operators? Simply because if you the more you can buy, the longer term arrangements you can get with the suppliers.
I would hope that, you know, some of the first movers, which will be the larger companies, we're seeing some of the container lines, they've obviously been first movers when it comes to LNG. We see that Maersk has ordered these methanol-powered vessels, and I think there was another company as well recently that's done the same thing. And I think that will help the entire industry. As the first movers progress into the new fuels, that will then sort of trickle down eventually, so that some of the smaller operators are going to be able to take advantage of those as well. It needs those first movers to develop the infrastructure to get those fuels available in the bunker ports.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that this is also going to direct more consolidation amongst the bunker suppliers, the physical suppliers? We've seen considerable consolidation over the last 5 to 10 years. Is that trend just going to continue now?
I think it will. What we've seen since we were in Dubai and the start of the war, with the volatility that we've seen, the prices going up, we're seeing, like in Rotterdam, I think pretty much all the suppliers have reduced their credit terms down to 14 or 15 days. We're seeing that in other places such as Houston as well. And I think that's going to feature more heavily, shorter payment terms, because for suppliers having to buy their cargoes on letters of credit or very short credit terms, this is going to help their cash flow. But there will be some that fall by the wayside, as it were. And I think consolidation amongst the sort of larger bunker trading houses is definitely going to happen.
Mm. How about from the buyer's perspective then? If you're getting reduced terms, 14 days rather than 30, and people's style may be to pay on time or a bit beyond terms, as it always has been. But how does that affect the operator's relationship with their customers, with the charterers? Are they having to demand faster payment or more secure forms of payment from the charterers?
I think that's sort of always been a feature of the shipping industry, especially if you look at things like demurrage, which, can be paid quite a while after it's been agreed. So I think that's always been the case. However, that's coming into sharper focus now, and we've certainly done some analysis on how it affects us. If we move from 30 to sort of 14 days paying for bunkers, how that affects our cash flow. Now, at the moment, it hasn't been, not all suppliers have reduced their credit terms. So it's not been a huge impact yet. But as we continue in this sort of volatile period, that may increase. And that may, of course, get us to look at, you know, how quickly we can get our income in so we can pay our suppliers.
I think, as with every business, cash is king always, isn't it? So everybody's absolutely constantly monitoring their cash flow. And I know we do here a shipping strategy. And I have to say, it's some of our biggest customers who have the worst payments performance. It's always the case for SMEs.
Yes, I can well imagine.
But, well, listen, Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you come onto the show. Thank you so much for taking the time out to reprise some of the things you talked about in Dubai, but also to get some of these new insights from you. And wish you the very best of luck for the balance of 2022. And your planning all around your EXI and your CII compliance.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
But for now, from Cambridge and from the Ship.Energy podcast, it's goodbye, and we'll see you again soon.